Welcome to Studio Tulsa on Health. I'm John Schumann, sitting in for Rich Fisher. Imagine you're sick, maybe even critically ill. You call for an ambulance to bring you to the hospital, but the nearest one, the one in your community, has shut its doors. It's had to go out of business. Now the paramedics are forced to take you to the much larger regional medical center more than 40 miles away. The care and the amenities may be better, but you've had a more arduous journey, and as they say in my business, time is tissue. If you're having a heart attack or stroke, you don't want to go 40 miles when you could go 5. In the last 4 years, more than 40 such rural hospitals in the U.S. have closed, mostly in the southern region. Many more are on the critical list, and without intervention or changes in policy, they too will be forced to close before the end of the decade. Rural hospital closures have come about for a multitude of reasons: industry consolidation, unmanageable costs, and the Affordable Care Act in states that have not widened Medicaid eligibility. A recent multimedia series that ran in USA Today beautifully defined and illustrated the scope of the problem. It was reported by Laura Unger and Jane O'Donnell. Unger, based in Louisville, Kentucky, is the National Regional Health Enterprise reporter for both USA Today and the Courier-Journal. She has more than 2 decades of experience as a reporter, the latter half of which she spent covering health and medicine. I spoke with her about the recent USA Today series on rural hospital closures over the phone from her office in Louisville. Laura Unger, welcome to Studio Tulsa on Health. I want to congratulate you on what was a really a great multimedia series in USA Today on the closure of rural hospitals. And I guess I wanted to start by asking you if you could just tell me the scope of the problem. How many rural hospitals are we talking about, or how many did you cover in the series? And I guess, why are they closing?
Well, thank you for having me, first of all. It is a pretty big problem and a growing problem. There are 43 rural hospitals that have closed nationally. So this is actually more than 1,500 beds total if you look at all of those hospitals. And the hardest hit area is the southern United States. Georgia, for example, lost 5 rural hospitals since 2012. It's happening across the nation, but the South is definitely hardest hit.
How do you define a rural hospital? Is it based on how many beds the hospital has, or is it just on a geographic catchment area?
Well, rural hospital is kind of a general term. Rural hospitals would just be basically hospitals in rural areas. But critical access hospitals have a particular definition, and these critical access hospitals are rural hospitals. They get a specific type of preferable reimbursement under Medicare, which is 99% of reasonable inpatient and outpatient costs is what it is. And these hospitals have 25 beds or less and are almost always located in rural areas and must be at least a 35-mile drive from the nearest hospital, or in some cases a 15-mile drive if it's a mountainous or other like hard-to-travel region.
And so all of these hospitals that you wrote about, you didn't write about specifically all of them, but the total number, 40 or so, these are all critical access rural hospitals?
Not all of them were necessarily critical access, but most of them were. Most of them were these kind of very small hospitals with the specific designation. But they didn't have to be to count among the hospitals that we looked at.
What is it that's causing these hospitals to close? I mean, obviously we know it's probably funding related, but you know, why are they falling on such hard times? I mean, seemingly if they're in rural areas, there's not a lot of competition around, right?
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of different factors at play here. I mean, one of the things that I've seen, not just in this story, but in other stories, there's a real tendency for hospitals to merge these days. The trend is toward bigger and bigger. And so these small hospitals are having to compete against these much larger hospital systems. And obviously these hospital systems that are much bigger have the economies of scale, and they can, you know, buy things with that purchasing power, et cetera, that a lot of these smaller hospitals really can't compete with in that way. So that's a real issue, the competition and this trend toward bigger and bigger, you know, and then these bigger hospitals competing against the smaller ones. The other thing is, I mean, these small hospitals still want to provide a very good level of care, and of course, that's getting more expensive. You know, the technology out there is very expensive. The state-of-the-art sort of offerings that hospitals can provide are expensive. And again, when you have a large hospital system, they can much more easily afford that than a small one. So the other issue is these smaller hospitals a lot of times are located in pretty poor areas. So you have less, or certainly traditionally, you know, less people were insured, or people had government insurance, Medicare and Medicaid, which traditionally has lower reimbursement rates. So that has figured in. And then also some hospital officials talk about the Affordable Care Act, particularly the penalties for having to readmit patients soon after they're released, and because, you know, they treat some of the sickest, poorest patients, and in that situation they would be more vulnerable to have to do that. So that creates a crushing burden to them, they say.
So patients who are sicker in general are more likely to be readmitted for the same diagnosis even after having left the hospital, and therefore those hospitals would be penalized under the new rules.
Exactly, yeah. And also, I mean, this is not just in states that have not expanded Medicaid. Kentucky, for example, has expanded Medicaid, but they also have this issue. And, you know, because even when you have expanded Medicaid as a state, you know, the Medicaid reimbursement is not as high as private insurance. So it does all kind of come down to finances, but there's a lot of different factors at play here.
Now, you are based in Louisville, Kentucky.
Yes.
And one of the hospitals you wrote about, or you looked at least, was Nicholas County Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about Nicholas County Hospital. What did they do to essentially survive?
They really struggled to survive. I mean, it was pretty rough for them. I mean, they just paid for their expenses kind of more on a month-to-month basis as time went on. They did gradually reduce the number of beds in the hospital. So, and they just really wanted to hang on because they were so much a part of the community, and the community really depended on them. But because of all the factors that we just talked about, you know, they were very vulnerable to closing, and eventually did close.
How did you, Laura, how did you come to the story? What led you to want to do this reporting?
Well, I think both me and my co-writer, Jane, had seen a lot of this when we were doing other stories, and in particular, we both participated in a story back earlier last year that looked at the Affordable Care Act and how it was playing out in Appalachia, particularly in Appalachian Kentucky. And during the reporting for that, we heard again and again from these small hospitals in very you know, rural counties that they were just struggling to survive and worried that they had to that they would have to close. And that resonated with both of us because that had been what we were hearing in other instances where we were reporting. So basically, we both came up with the idea and put it on our story list, and then realized, oh, we both have this idea. This is obviously a real issue because we both have this idea. Let's do it. So we did, and so that's kind of how that came about.
And that's a nice partnership. And you've been a health reporter for a number of years. So you are familiar with the industry and have, as you pointed out, seen some of these problems up close.
Yeah. I've been covering health for a total of about 12 years now, all aspects of it, I would say. I guess kind of more the medical side, but also public health, some of the business of healthcare over the years I have covered. So and I come in contact with a lot of folks within the health industry and various types of sources within the health industry.
There's a couple of stories that you have written about in this series that I was hoping you would share some more with us. One was the story of Walter Skelly. Can you tell us about him?
Yeah, he is a Georgia man, and he had a problem. He had an emergency, and the ambulance actually got there in time, but it took him 45 minutes to get to the nearest hospital because his hospital in his region had closed, Stuart Webster Hospital. So on the way, he actually got violently ill and had two strokes hours later. Now, who knows what would have happened if the hospital that was much closer to him was still open, but he, you know, he certainly wonders if that had something to do with his, you know, how sick he got.
And there's kind of a haunting photo of Stuart Webster Hospital where you show this sort of, I don't know if you'd call it Georgian or colonial architecture, and then the sort of the overgrown weeds just sort of blowing about in the wind right in front of the hospital. There's another patient I was hoping you'd tell us about, Jimmy Price.
Yeah, he was he is a Kentucky man, and he actually says if it wasn't for a hospital that recently did close in Kentucky, at Nicholas County Hospital, that he might well be dead, because he had a heart attack while working as a mechanic at a school. He was about a half mile away from the hospital and was able to get to the hospital very quickly. They were able to stabilize him and send him on to the University of Kentucky, and he had a triple bypass. So he was kind of one of those many stories that we heard, you know, of the value of these hospitals, that they are able, because they are right in the community, to very quickly help folks in that community and not require the long rides that people like Walter Skelly have had to face, you know, in the absence of their hospital.
And with grave consequences.
Absolutely.
I'm wondering, you know, from your reporting, I mean, it seems like a fairly, you know, kind of dismal prognosis, if you will. I mean, the title of the series is Critical Condition That the Rural Hospitals Are Facing, and you pointed out a number of the reasons why. I mean, one is consolidation, which I think almost every healthcare market in the country has seen to some extent, you know, big hospital players gobbling up practices or smaller hospitals to be part of their networks, or for, you know, economies of scale or efficiency, you know, closing some of the smaller or more outlying facilities, you know, trying to achieve more of a critical mass or bring patients, aka customers, into the central facility. What do you think about the future of rural hospitals? I mean, is there any kind of priority put on this, or is this something that falls down to the state level and there's not necessarily a coordinated federal policy?
Well, it's actually both. I think it's starting to get talked about now because it's coming to the forefront a little bit more. I think health in general is, you know, in light of the ACA. But I think for the near future, according to a lot of the experts we spoke with, a lot of the same struggles are going to be happening for a while. I mean, there's no easy fixes for this. I mean, states have tried to come up with some of their own answers, talking about it in legislatures, and like in Kentucky, for example, the state auditor held town meetings to get people's thoughts on how to deal with it. But there are no easy answers to this. After this story came out, the Senate did bring up the issue and actually cited the story, but there are no bills or anything that I know of right now, you know, along the lines of this, but it is kind of bubbling up as an issue for both states and the federal government to take a look at, because it certainly is affecting a lot of, you know, rural America, which is a huge swath of the nation.
Yeah, and the again, another of the features on the website for the story, which we'll link to on our website, you have a map that shows little blue flags of where these hospitals have closed, and you can see definitely the preponderance of them throughout the South. As you point out, more than 40 have closed just since 2010 alone. But there are others that are on sort of the watch list, are they not?
Absolutely. And actually, those are in some of these other states as well. Colorado, for example, has some on the watch list. And so, you know, it certainly is something that a lot of states are looking at, that even if they haven't had this problem so far, they are definitely looking at what's happening in some of these hardest hit states. Indiana, for example, again, they are looking at a lot of teetering hospitals and neighboring Kentucky and Ohio and seeing what's happening there. It is something that seems that it may get worse before it gets better, just judging from a lot of these hospitals that are kind of teetering on the brink right now.
So you and your partner, Jane O'Donnell, did a wonderful job of reporting on this problem that's currently going on, and it seems like it might get worse. And I'm wondering, it didn't seem to me to be in the article, but the set of articles, but is there something... you mentioned not really much of a coordinated effort thus far, although it sounds like there was some Senate inquiry after, you know, citing your series, which is really great, and kudos to you. Are there possibilities to remediate this through, you know, virtual visits, or, you know, using online using the computer, as it were, to do remote visits, telephonic visits?
that is something that's been done now, and certainly doctors and hospital officials do cite that as a possible solution. And I know it is happening more and more. Some of these virtual visits involve more of a TV sort of situation where doctors can actually quote unquote see you, through the closed circuit television sort of situation. So that is one possible answer. Of course, you know, if you have a situation like some of these emergencies where you heart attack or something like that, obviously you're not going to be dealing with a virtual visit for that, but for more of the preventive care or that sort of thing, absolutely, that is a something that doctors do bring up as one answer to deal with it.
Yeah, I mean, it is very hard to imagine, obviously, in a crisis situation. You mentioned heart attack or stroke, such as Walter Skelly was having occurred. You really need the healthcare practitioners available. So telehealth doesn't seem. I mean, in these rural areas, it might seem to make sense somehow. I don't know how this would be able to be done, but to have community health workers or folks who have at least an interest in being able to administer some of these critical medications that need to occur, you know, within minutes of the onset of an attack, because it seems like it would be near impossible to do that through a type of virtual visit or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, it really creates a quandary. I know another thing that's being talked about in Kentucky is perhaps reviving a heliport type of thing. And that is another possibility, too, getting people to the nearest trauma center, quickly through helicopter. So that is another possibility, too. But, of course, all of these things cost money, and they're not quick fixes by any means, and they don't solve the whole problem, but people are talking, and that's just bringing things to people's attention. I mean, that's basically what we're trying to do, is just point out that this is a problem, and what caused it, and what people think can be done.
You're listening to Studio Tulsa on Health. I'm John Schumann, sitting in today for Rich Fisher. Our guest is Laura Unger, who's National Regional Health Enterprise reporter for USA Today and the Courier Journal, which is a newspaper in Louisville, Kentucky, where she is based. And together, along with Jane O'Donnell, the two of them reported a wonderful multi-chapter series that ran in USA Today and is available on their website, which we will share. We'll link to you on our website on Studio Tulsa about the crisis in rural hospitals. They titled it Rural Hospitals in Critical Condition, the crisis being one of funding and need. These are critical access. Many of these, not all of them, many of them are critical access hospitals that are in remote places serving large catchment areas. And Laura, you said you've been a health reporter or done medical reporting for about 12 years now, mm-hmm. Both in your current role and in one of your previous positions. How did you get into healthcare reporting or medical reporting?
Well, I've always been very interested in healthcare and medicine as a subject, just, reading about it and just being interested in it. And I was a feature writer in Delaware back 12 years ago at a paper called The News Journal in Wilmington, Delaware. And they had a very big problem with cancer mortality in Delaware at the time. I believe they still do, but certainly at the time it was among the highest cancer mortality rates in the nation there in Delaware. And so I was sort of tapped to help out with that project there, and spent more than a year with a couple of colleagues looking into the cancer problem in Delaware, and was just fascinated by really every aspect of the reporting. And during that process, I learned so much about the healthcare system, public health in that state, and all of the different aspects. And I was very much, I thought, wow, this is a very rewarding area to cover, because not only is it, super interesting to me, but it's so important in people's lives. I mean, health and medicine affects every single person, which you can't say about every beat in journalism. And you can do every type of story. You can write investigative stories, personal stories of patients, trend stories like this one. You really have a chance to write every type of story there is and have an impact. A personal and even a larger impact. I've written stories that have that have brought laws about, which is a pretty amazing thing. So, you have a chance to make a difference and cover something that is important to everybody's lives.
May not be fair to ask you, but I'm curious, you've sort of piqued our interest. What was there any kind of grand conclusion from that cluster story in Delaware?
Well, the major thing that we found was that the incidence rate for cancer was about the same as that area of the country, but the mortality rate was really, really high. So what we concluded was that it was issues within the healthcare system that people were being diagnosed late, maybe not getting the treatments that they needed in time, that sort of thing. So they weren't surviving. So it wasn't that they were getting cancer at those high rates; it's that they were dying of it at that high, which was the opposite of what people thought at the time, because people kind of always thought that people, got cancer at a super high rate. And so that was probably one of the most interesting findings that we had, that it's not getting, it's dying of. And that was surprising to us, too. We expected it to find there's some kind of thing in the environment or something that is causing more people to get cancer in Delaware than elsewhere. But no, it was death versus incidence. So
interesting. I also wanted to ask you a little bit about we were talking about your career as a health reporter, medical reporter, and my understanding is that you have sort of a dual role, which is somewhat unique. You are you're based in Louisville, where for a number of years you've written for the Courier Journal, but it is a Gannett newspaper, and so you also, as it were, write for the national level of that, USA Today. So you're a health enterprise reporter for both USA Today and the Courier Journal. And I guess, how does that work?
I have editors at USA Today, and I do stories for them, and they're national in scope, and they will include a lot of regional sorts of sources and stuff like that. And then the Courier Journal and other regional papers owned by Gannett will run those stories. And then sometimes I do Kentucky-only stories that would only run in the Courier Journal, but more often than not, I'm doing the national stories, and then they'll run locally as well. And sometimes I will almost rework, I guess, a story so that it has, the local information is up higher in the story and that sort of thing, so that it has more local relevance in Louisville, for example. If maybe the USA Today version of the story would have that Louisville information down further in the story. So that's basically kind of how it works. And Gannett owns a lot of newspapers and media companies throughout the nation, and any of them can pick up these stories as well, and many of them do. Some of them have a USA Today insert in the local papers, and then they will run the stories as well. So it gives me a much broader audience, which is great. And gives me a chance to kind of work on some of these big national issues in a way that I think has more impact. So that's the whole point of doing this, is to make a difference. So
yeah, I mean, it sounds like a very innovative model, really, to I guess make use in a sense of all the resources, both with you as a reporter, but also for you as the reporter, the resources that the national brand has to offer.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it is a good use of resources, and it's I think it's good for me. It's good for the readers. So I'm pretty happy with it, and hope to do more stories like this.
So I wanted to circle back to the series that you did, Rural Hospitals in Critical Condition, that is a web-based series. It did appear in the USA Today, both in the USA Today and also in the Courier Journal, or different parts of it. But the online version is so wonderful because it is multimedia. It has wonderful photographs. It has beautifully arranged text that's very easy to read with clean margins. There's a map feature, as I mentioned, and then there's a very nice photographic slideshow. And I'm wondering, have you had an opportunity to use this format before on other kind of long-form reporting pieces?
Yes, that is the trend within Gannett and within really all newspapers now to have multimedia, use these various ways of telling stories. Because if you watch the video that ran with this, for example, it tells a personal story. It tells like one aspect, but it also has that kind of personal feel to it kind of zeroes in on one aspect of the story. So that's really another way to get into the story and to care about the story. And then I think graphics, especially online graphics, that you can interact with are very helpful for people to understand a story. And I have done these sorts of long-form stories before, and I do find that a lot of these alternate storytelling forms really add something to a story. I mean, you can see the look on someone's face, which, as a writer, you can, write the best you possibly can, but you're not going to capture it in a way that the video does. And same with photos. I mean, if you have a gallery of photos, that really helps you tell the story. So, and thank you for saying that about the online presentation, because my colleagues there at USA Today did a great job putting it all together under time constraints, and it looked great. So,
well, that was my next question, because I think in sort of what I envisioned to be the typical reporting, I mean, it's the journalist, the reporter hunched over her typewriter, from the archaic version, hunched over her computer or on the phone, hashing out, getting the details, but this is very much a multimedia presentation. So there are, as you pointed out, photographers involved. I assume videographers, maybe web producers, or how many people are involved in a project like this?
Oh, I don't even know how many, because you also have to count the various editors who are involved. Copy editors, origination editors, and then of course there were two reporters involved with this. I know we had at least two photographers, maybe even more, and then there's video editors too. So it's a ton of people to doing this. And in fact, not particularly for this one, but in other stories that I've done, I have actually shot and edited video myself and taken photos. So these days, the old job of reporter, I mean, certainly, back in 1990 when I got started in this, you wrote the story. It was like what you just said, hunched over her computer. We had just put away the typewriters, in fact. And now it's a completely different thing. I mean, you have to have many skills and really, be able to tell stories in various ways and know the different technologies to be able to tell the stories in the way that is most impactful.
Laura Unger is the National Regional Health Enterprise reporter for USA Today and the Courier Journal. She's based in Louisville, Kentucky. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, that's our show for today. Studio Tulsa on Health is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of KWGS or the University of Tulsa. If you've missed a recent show, you can listen anytime from our website at publicradiotulsa.org. I'm John Schumann, sitting in for Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.